You are listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. Join him as he and his guests discover how businesses thrive in California.
Well, welcome to The Pilgrim on the 405. We have some interesting conversation today with David and Scott from WMBC. So, David and Scott Coles, welcome to The Pilgrim on the 405.
Well, thank you, Will. We're looking forward to it.
So tell us a little bit about WMBC, in case there are people who don't know exactly what that is. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. WMBC is a firm that was started back in 2003. We're a boutique firm that focuses on high net worth individuals and private companies. We've made a habit out of getting to know people intimately and then planning their financial well-being based on their interests, needs, and desires, those things that make and motivate them as people.
Now, I have heard that before from wealth management companies. So what makes you different?
Yeah, absolutely. It's, we created a process called Human Wealth. And, as you said, a lot of wealth advisors say they focus on their clients, but it's very hard to really understand exactly what a client desires out of life. And so we started with the beginning of our process is called Discover Well-Being. And we worked with a number of social scientists and well-being scientists throughout the world to create a process that understands 13 different attributes of somebody's well-being, whether it be your sense of autonomy, your social network that you have, your sense of security, et cetera. And then after we go through that process, we sit down with them and ask them about these different areas in their life and what's most important to them, as opposed to goal-based planning, such as when do I want to retire? Do I want to put kids through college? It's more about your subjective feeling and how you want to experience life.
So wealth management then for you is more than just the bottom line, what's my dollar sign?
Exactly. You know, Will, it's interesting. The industry, I actually was lucky enough to get into the industry when it was really brand new. It was a maverick industry. There were no regulations. There was really no place for it. People were either seeing a stockbroker, an insurance agent, a real estate agent, or a trust advisor or a banker, and nobody really communicated. And the whole idea of financial planning was quite altruistic. It was, let's help people have something that they can have a plan and a concept and a belief in. And over the years, it's basically become a money management operation. There's very little going on except, can I gather your assets? Can I put them in the market? And can I get a fee for it? And we really have always held true to the planning concept. I started my first plan in 1983, and we've been doing them ever since. But as we've done that, this evolution of who people are and what they want out of life has become virtually a mission for our firm, I would say, to reintroduce that concept to the industry.
So what does that mean when you talk about a plan for life? What does that mean to you?
Yeah. So I think it would help to answer that question if we went to how we work through this human wealth process. So it's really a four-phase modality. We start with discover well-being, and then we move to explore resources. And from there, we go to design systems and then implement plan. And what we believe is that life is ever-changing. It evolves. And so we want to revisit this process annually to make sure we're making the adjustments to our human wealth plan to support the life that people are living in the moment. So to us, it means, for instance, our well-being, only 10% of that has to do with our material means, such as what we do for work, where we live, how much money we make. 90% of it has to do with other aspects of our life, such as the choices we make with the means that we have. And so we set out to help people have a better relationship with their money. Mm-hmm. And in order to have a better relationship with your money, we have to understand the way you want to live your life. the social networks that you have and you choose to involve yourself with, the protections you want to have in place, what looks like a satisfying life to you?
Well, all right. So if someone were coming to you based upon their experience with a wealth advisor before, how would you change their mindset from "I am here to help you manage your money and get a fee from it" to "I am here to, and what I'm hearing from you, I'm here to help you live a better life"?
That's a great question, Will. And you know what? It's I'm glad you're hitting on these topics, because this is exactly what people ask us. You're exactly right. I'll just give you kind of an interesting scenario that isn't uncommon for us at all. Someone comes in and we introduce this concept, and our questionnaire is very simple. It's online. It's 18 questions, and it takes about 10 minutes to take. And then when they come in, we actually have this spider graph that shows them different areas of their life. And some might be rated really high, some might be a little lower. And generally, that's the case. People aren't usually, you know, feeling great about every aspect. But what we do is we allow them to talk about it. So first of all, one of the things that we feel is a big change is people get to look at a result of who they are before we talk at all about money. Mm-hmm. And then they get to interpret it for us. We don't interpret for them because we don't see anything as right or wrong. Mm-hmm. And as they're explaining their lives, we're able to make notes and then discuss things with them to help us have a lot of clarity. What's normal for us to hear is no one's ever taken the time to get to know us the way you guys do. This feels so good to share.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And now we're able to then plug holes that most advisors never even knew were there. We've had people that are having issues because they never got over a war. We have other ones that have concerns of making sure that their family wealth lasts for 4 or 5 or 6 generations. We have some that are concerned about the well-being. We've had people grow up in stark poverty, and now they're very wealthy, and they want to make sure their family never loses sight of where they've come from and that they always give back to community. All these things come pouring out because of this opportunity for them to interpret their lives for us.
Well, let me ask you a tough question. When somebody comes to you and you're asking these questions, are there a series of areas that you're looking at? I mean, I've seen a number of different circle graphs that say, you know, where are you in terms of your health? Where are you in terms of your relationships? Where is that part of what you're doing, is trying to cover a comprehensive picture of somebody's well-being?
Yeah, so that's exactly right. So we worked with, as I said, a team of well-being scientists. They actually were commissioned by the UK government to measure the well-being of their citizens there to see if the policies and procedures they were putting in place were actually promoting the happiness and well-being of their citizens, mm-hmm. and not just the GDP of the country.
Mm-hmm.
So, wow, what an incredible concept that a government looks at that. And we spoke to them and said, can we bring this to the financial industry and mm-hmm. look at somebody's well-being as it relates to their finances?
Mm-hmm.
So working with them, we created this questionnaire that focuses, like I said, on 13 attributes of somebody's well-being, and mm-hmm. then we relate that to your finances. So it is literally taking a look at all of your life, and then we say what areas need to be supported, because mm-hmm. money has a way of touching every aspect of our life, right? If we want to affect change in our relationship, we may pay for a therapist. We may pay to go on vacation or spend time with them. If we want to mm-hmm. help our children get forward, money is usually something there to bring about change. And if we're using it in a way that's improper, it's not going to create the desired effect in our life. So that's why we look at all aspects of your well-being and then start to design systems with the resources that you have.
Well, all right. So for instance, if someone comes in and they are what you would call a high net worth individual, is there ever a place to talk with them about giving back?
That's a great question, Will. And what's really interesting, what David and I think have enjoyed the most, is in our practice, we see a lot of that. Like I mentioned, a person who had come from, had come basically from the streets. He literally grew up on the streets. One client of mine grew up on the streets of Mexico. And a very important thing for him is that he doesn't want his family to lose touch with those things. And so both in money and in time, he wants all generations that are coming from his loins to recognize that there's a different world than they live in. And he wants them to feel it and understand it and participate in improving it. How do they improve a world that they don't even know exists, right? Mm-hmm. We, in our family governance, we'll actually set up family governances for people in this process where the family gets together and they determine what are their values, what are the purposes that they're here for, and what do they plan to do to improve the lives of, I would say, the human aspect of the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hence our name, Human Wealth. It's about that humanity side.
Yeah. I mean, there will be, you know, very charitable clients and we'll look at, hey, in order for this wealth to be passed down through generations, we want to make sure you're giving a certain portion of it back. And it doesn't have to be exactly one charity, but it has to have meaning. And why are we doing this? And what am I going to do with this money to improve the human life of other people as I have been blessed?
How do you recruit? How do you go out and invite people to come and visit with you?
Great point. So again, there's several ways. One of the things that's happened to us has been almost natural, Will. For example, we've had referrals from other advisors, as all of us do, right? It's not uncommon for us to have networks of whether they're CPAs or even clients and attorneys, et cetera. But where we focus is on helping them to understand our concern for humanity overall. How do we build an understanding and express, let others express that? So what we found is the newer generation, my generation, for example, me, I went to work at 20 years old. I put my head down and I said, I'll look up when my family's gone through college and I'm ready to retire, right?
Right. Right.
It's kind of our mentality. Today, there's a different world out there. They're going, hey, wait a minute. I want to have purpose and value from the day I get started. Mm-hmm. So as we've told our story at our own events, as we've told our story for events for others, like we're doing with you, it's amazing how much it resonates, especially with people that are a little younger generation, but also with older people who are saying, wow, I really want to take a different look at myself now, and I want to do something special. And we really recognize, I mean, I think David said it first. He's the one that told me, Dad, we're not going to attract every single person who comes along. We are going after a certain group of people that see this world as more than just dollars and cents.
Mm-hmm.
And that is true. That's who we're looking for.
Well, do you ever have to help people identify their core values, what they stand for?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I wouldn't say you can say we help them identify it, but really what it is we present them with this radar graph, what we call as a well-being profile report. And then we say, this is how you answered it. Does this look like you? Tell us why this looks like you. Tell us why this area is higher or lower. Does that mean anything to you? And what happens is, instead of saying, what is your core value? We start looking at certain areas of what make them, and it starts to come out as they review it. And so It really helps us go, oh, okay, you are not somebody who trusts people right away. And so you have a smaller group of friends. Great. Now, let's look at going forward, what we need to do to continue to build that community that you have there, or how are we going to make sure that we work within the confines of how you feel about life? And that really, instead of saying, what's your core values, that brings out those core values for
right.
us.
Right. I noticed that when I work with my clients as an entrepreneurial operating system facilitator, that when we start talking about core values, sometimes the owner has said, these are the core values I want to have here. And what we have to do is back up and say, wait a minute, let's find out what core values you have right now. Because as Patrick Lencioni says, you don't want to have core values that are aspirational, that right. somehow we're going to get there. Let's talk about what our core values are now. What is it that we want to, what is it that we stand for? Because that's how we are together as a family, or in my case, this is how we are together as a company. And then we're looking to use these core values to celebrate, to review, to hire, and to ultimately to fire, because it's those core values that make the company.
Wow, Will, that's really awesome. You know, it's interesting. We have this thing called the dynamic model, and what it does is it actually talks about that. And I see where you're trying to get us to go. And maybe if we missed it, I apologize, but the thing is if our core values don't align with our material or our business or personal activities, then what happens is this spiraling model that helps us find joy and greatness in life literally turns upside down, and it creates depression and separation and anxiety. Yep. We literally are a firm that's trying to discover, hey, wait, you're saying this, you're making this your placement, but you're acting this way. This is not working.
So we're looking for coherence, right? We're looking for coherence. How do my core values, not my aspirational values, but the ones that I live out, how does that get reflected in my behaviors?
Absolutely.
Right? And to me, that's integrity. When we can be coherent, we're going to put people at ease, because people can pick up on when we're not coherent.
Exactly.
And now, you know, it to me, what I hear you talking about is a world that's forming right now, with business management, with spirituality, with health. All of these things are breaking barriers and beginning to ask questions, not about the specific silo, like wealth or health or religion or business, but they're really, really coming across those barriers and beginning to learn lots of different ways of looking at the world. But some of them have to do with what we've learned about how the brain works, right? Some have to do with, I mean, I got to tell you something that happened to me the other day was 2 weeks, 2 months ago. I was offered a copy of a book called The Deficit Myth. Mm-hmm. If you haven't read it, I'd love to talk to you about it. I'd love to hear you respond to it. But it's a mainstream economist who is writing out of a context, and she says, if you are a sovereign country with a fiat currency, you never run out of money. There is no such thing as a long-term deficit impact. You don't have to pay it back. Right. And that blew me away, understanding that we can do what we want to do, which makes a huge difference.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. That's really a crux of what we looked at in developing this, right? Is we live in a society that we call it the cycle of more. And we talk about ending that cycle of more, because there becomes a point where we have enough. And in our society in the United States, like you're saying, there is enough to go around. And having more and more is really not about me feeling better about myself. It's trying to keep up with what I think society wants me to be in order to feel better about myself. And so as we take a step back and look at those core things that really matter to us, that's what we call ending the cycle of more. And you know, as part of creating this process is, you know, we looked at and said, managing your wealth in a way that supports you feeling good in life is not just for the ultra wealthy,
right?
It's not just for people who can afford a financial advisor. It is for everybody. We all should know and be able to interact with our money and learn how to interact with it in a way that promotes our happiness, because there is enough there. And that's a huge goal of ours, is to make sure that all people in all society are able to have access to a process that can help them have a good relationship with their money to feel good.
You know, one of the most exciting things, two things I'll mention. Once was when I was working with a construction company in Ohio, and we came to the time when we were asking, what is your core purpose? What is your purpose as a company? And, you know, I was expecting something about building commercial buildings. And they said, our core purpose, our reason for being, is so that every employee of this construction company will retire financially stable. Wow.
Yeah. Isn't that something?
Amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah. But you see, for us, we want to really exploit those type of people to the world, because in general, society doesn't see or hear that mainstream. But yet we run in day to day to people with that purity of heart often. And it goes so counter to what people think, quote, a high net worth person is. But there are good people in the world, and there are good reasons to have a business. It's not just about selfish ventures. And I think that society today is really open to understanding and exploring the value, not just for the owner, but for those other people in the company.
Yeah. And the other example I wanted to share with you was a local construction company, a manufacturing company. They have 150 people. Of course, they have a lot of people on the manufacturing line who are not high net worth individuals. I introduced them to a woman who wanted to educate people on how to deal with money. They implemented it, brought her in, hired her, and invited the entire workforce to attend courses. And they began to pay off debts. They began to save. Their whole attitude toward financial security changed.
You know, it's really interesting, because you've heard David now, Will, twice talk about the 13 attributes that we have. One of the things we do is we slowly go through and define each of those before we show a client their graph. Mm-hmm. In there, we find some very interesting discoveries that we like them to ponder as they're looking at. The reason I bring this up is it goes along with what you're saying. One of the things we find is that goal setting is a very positive thing in general for people. However, we found that goal setting for the purpose of only monetary gain is much less rewarding or successful compared to somebody who has goals that are related to community, mm-hmm. social ability, or family interests, things that are outside of just making money for its sake.
Right, right. That, and it seems to me that if someone becomes focused on just amassing this mountain of wealth, that what comes along with that is the fear that they will lose it. And to me, that is a scarcity mentality.
Exactly.
Right? And when we change that to an abundance mentality, where there's more than enough to go around, change that to an abundance mentality, then it's not so much a matter of building a mountain of wealth. It's a matter of helping folks around me or even beyond me to participate in this abundance. And often the gifts that we make are more than just facilitating a behavioral change. It's an emotional change, because all of a sudden somebody else can then move toward an abundance mentality.
You know, and you bring the point, the difference between scarcity and abundance is that it's really interesting, because within your area, and whether you call that your community or the world or however you spread that, we can define that another time. But as we create this abundance by giving and sharing knowledge and ideas and even funds, that abundance lifts our boat as well, And abundance, of course, fills everybody's boat.
Right, right. Because the abundance is already there. We don't have to create it. It's there. It's recognizing it and living into it.
Yeah.
That's been my experience with the companies that I work with. You know, one of the things that I say to them when I start is, I'm not going to give you answers, because as a leadership team, you already have 99% of the answers right here. My job is to help you see them and then operationalize them.
You know, it's interesting in this conversation, we have been working with social scientists looking at our Explore Resources section about someone's social network and how your social network can impact your happiness in life and your upward trajectory in your life and community. What was so interesting is they said, the more you give to your community, the more your children have an upward trajectory in society. So as you help other people, you're helping your offspring.
Because it's that mental, it's that mindset of abundance.
Yeah.
Rather than scarcity.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, I have an idea. I'm going to I'm going to find some time, but I want to introduce you to this woman who has made her life educating folks on the line in manufacturing to help them become better, because it seems to me that those two things go together. Inevitably, the companies that I work with get better, and they get better in lots of different ways. One of them is monetarily. And as they look for their 10, 15, 25-year project goal, I want them also to have that kind of mentality about how are we then sharing this with people around us. And at the same time, it seems to me that that goes along with helping the people in the company to learn how to do that. And so that might be an interesting collaboration between her and you.
I think that would be very useful. You know, it's interesting conversations you have. We've had these same experiences as you. And one of the things we've found, for example, in working with corporations, you know, most of them have some form of retirement account. Mm-hmm. And in these retirement accounts, the people that are educated, the executives, the people that you would expect, they get it right away, right? They're going, of course I'm going to put all my money in here, right?
Yeah, right.
But people on the line are afraid to put their money in there because they're going, hey, I'm going home just to make sure that I'm feeding and paying rent.
Yes, yes.
And taking away is hard. And one thing that I thought was very interesting is we had one firm that we were sitting there it was a very successful manufacturing company. And we had the president and the founders sitting there, and they're saying, well, why can't we put more money in our plan? I said, it's really simple. The rest of the people aren't, and there's rules. And they said, well, why aren't they? Don't they know this is the best thing they can do? And I said, honestly, they don't. So we had the president and the founder actually got up themselves and said, let me tell you why this is important to me that you do this. And let me show you what I'm willing to do if you will do this. And let me tell you the story of where I started and where you should be looking in your, you need to raise your sights. You should see me not as your boss, but as an example of you. It was amazing. The enrollment that we got.
Yeah. Well, that's similar to the experience that I have in working with EOS, with the Entrepreneurial Operating System, with companies, because they're inevitably moving from top down, where two or three people at the top are the only ones who know the vision about where it's going, and then they tell everybody else what to do. And they wonder, you know, why they're overworked, why they're not getting the productivity gains that they should be getting. And so we help them to begin to roll out a system over a couple of years to begin to tap into all of that unrealized potential. And to add to that a financial conversation, I think, would be wonderful.
Yeah, that's incredible. I love the work that you do with EOS. I mean, a company is only as good as the human capital that it has. And by human capital, obviously, it's each individual person that is working there. and to make sure that they feel fulfilled in what they're doing and want to show up to work because they have a vision of it, they believe in it, and it gets them excited, you won't have a better workforce than having people, every single one of them, wake up and do that.
Yeah. And I'm just putting the finishing touches on my first book, which is called Get Everybody on the Same Page to Get What You Want from Your Business.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And cool. So we've got a lot to talk about, so that'll be fun. So tell me what kinds of things are you thinking about in the future for WMBC?
Let's shift it to human wealth, I think, if you don't mind, Will, because
sure, absolutely.
About really fits where we see human wealth going.
So yeah. So WMBC is our wealth management company. Human wealth was created, and this is the process we're talking about. So WMBC is a client of human wealth. We see human wealth going is one, we've created technology and software that'll help streamline this process so other financial advisors will be able to use this and implementing it with their clients. And so in 2021, we'll start to bring on, you know, a select number of design partners to start training them on how to use this and how it helps their clients. Also, we really have a goal to, as I hinted at earlier, bring wealth management down from the wealthy and give access of it to what we can call those people on the line. We're looking at bringing this human touch in a streamlined way to people that they'll have access to it as well. Looking at creating an app that they can actually have advice and have videos to look at and say, how do I work through this on my own, and what does it cost to work with somebody to create this in my life? Those are two kind of the near term things. And then kind of our longer term is how do we move this down from ultra wealthy?
Good. Good. Well, now tell me what has COVID done to your plans? Anything?
You know, it's interesting for me, from my side. So WMBC is the firm, right, of the human wealth where we're doing the planning. And of course, it's been interesting. Will, I'll be honest, this has been our best year we've ever had in our life. And I am not taking credit for it. I'm grateful. But we've had to adjust to where our staff is. We've had to adjust to communication differences. Again, I grew up in the face-to-face, belly-to-belly world. I got on the phone for one purpose, set the appointment so I can look you eye to eye and we can talk about things, right? I think I did. But I've had to learn to communicate in different ways. It's made us sharper. It's made us use the technology that's available to communicate with our clients. And I think it's prepped me, not so much David, but prepped me to be able to deal with the changing times in this kind of incubator pressured period. Now, that being said, I don't think David would say that I'm good enough at it yet, but it's caused me to gain some better experience. Our clients, we've been able to focus on making them comfortable, which goes right with our whole point of human wealth anyway. When we do have to see them face to face, there are those times we're extra careful. We've made protocol to make sure that they're safe and sound. We've got a different way of communicating with them now. The way we set up appointments and deal with them is more deliberate and more careful. So I think it's given us a humanity in the face of separation. We've actually created another form of humanity in the way we care.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I think is so exciting for me. People talking about, oh, I'm zoomed out. I mean, it's fatigue. Going back, what we were doing before was we were doing a lot of telephoning, right? Well, think back before the telephone was there. The whole different world. But they learned how to do it very, very effectively. And I think that's what we're doing now, is learning how to use the tools that we have, given the constraints that we have, given the limitations, or given the opportunities that are there.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. And that, you know, to me, what I've been saying for years is we shouldn't be afraid of this technology coming out. You know, in a lot of ways we can be afraid of, is it going to take over? Is it going to, you know, cause problems? But we can look at our business and we can look at our interactions with people and say, how can I embrace this and use it to further my relationships with other people and help us grow even more as individuals and as businesses.
Do you know, Will, I'd love, David, could you just kind of talk if just 2 or 3 minutes at least on the concept of what you're saying, the pyramid of how we've changed the way that we charge fees and things like that. Cause I think it breaks out here and shows the way we're adapting to these things that are becoming more commoditized versus not, and how, where we're building a different importance.
Sure. Yeah. If you don't mind, going around the wealth management industry, there is this pyramid, and there's three different areas. One of them at the bottom of it is management of assets. And that's really accumulating our assets. Where do we put it? What stock do we put it in? What bonds do we use? An IRA, a trust account, et cetera. Then the next rung is really goal-based planning, right? I want to retire at this age. I want to put my kids through college. I want to buy a house. These types of goals, and how are we going to save for them? And at the very top of this is fulfillment. And what they've been saying is, how do you get up to that fulfillment level as an advisor, as you work with your clients and with people? How do you spend your time up there? And technology has come in now, and we've had a lot of fear around it of, oh, Wealthfront or Betterment, these robo advisors that people can just put their money in, it creates an asset allocation and it runs for them. They don't have to worry about it. Advisors have been afraid of that replacing them. We have certain things like personal capital and other apps that will help you plan for your goals and how to accomplish them financially. And so what I looked at is said, let's embrace that technology. Let's embrace what it's doing for us, because yes, you're right. Most advisors cannot get you a better return than the vast amounts of data that we have in these algorithms now. Mm-hmm. We just can't. So embrace it, use it, spend your time up in the fulfillment section, understanding your clients and having that relationship with them. So that's what our mentality here has been. I think as COVID has come around, that mentality has poured over into other areas going, we need to spend our time in fulfillment. What type of technology can we use? Let's use Zoom. Let's use, whatever else may be out there. DocuSign, exactly.
DocuSign, right. We're in the midst of a mortgage change, and it's all done. I mean, goodness, we'll have one time where the agent will come and we'll sign all those papers all at once that we've already seen, right?
Right.
And that's it.
Yep. Absolutely.
Amazing. Well, let me ask you a tough question now. Given what we're learning about whiteness and how that might have a lot of effect on how we see other people who are not part of the white group, how do you see yourself in that?
Great question. As to me, I look at it as we are not very far removed from racism and the separation that have happened, right? Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to understand that and to understand everybody grows up in different areas of life and has a different view on the world because of how we were raised, because of our environment.
Right.
And it's important that we recognize that and we offer empathy to everybody we come in contact with. I do believe personally that there are some, what's the word I'm looking for? Privilege, mm-hmm. because of where we grew up and how we grew up. And to me, the biggest thing that we can look at is education. Mm-hmm. How can we improve the education of everybody? I know that tax dollars from communities mainly go to, are the main funds of education. And so therefore, if we're growing up in a community that doesn't have as many tax dollars, we're not going to get access to as much education. And to me, that's a problem. Mm-hmm. We need to make sure everybody has the same education and understand the privilege and go, how can we help reduce this whiteness or privilege that somebody may have versus another person? Mm-hmm.
And I don't always think it's always just color either. A lot of it is we can talk. I mean, did we grow up on the coast? Did we grow up in Central America? Did we grow up There's a lot of things here. And part of what I think when we talk about education, it's not just school and money for school. Some communities, you could give them all the school in the world, but they've been brought up and culturally separated from that concept for so long, It wouldn't even register until we build that community up to have an understanding of what that education can mean. So it seems simple in a sense, but there's really we've got to build up that community first in order for that education to matter.
Yeah, you know, after the election in 2016, what I realized was that there was a large number of people that I had just discounted. Didn't go to college, maybe other things, but I just discounted them. And so part of my journey from 2016 on has been to find ways of getting into conversations with people and moving them from this discounted objective world into a human world where I got to listen to them. I got to discover who they are, what their needs are, what their hopes and dreams are, and how they're feeling conflict. And that is not just racial. It's all across the board. But that conversation, it seems to me, that's the path forward, is conversation.
I couldn't agree with you more, Will. I mean, David should be saying this many times, but, you know, to me, there's no room for politics, really. I just look at it as a separation that's just, it's unparalleled, that type of separation. Mm-hmm. And I keep saying, when I talk to human beings, human being to human being, we have so much less separation because we're actually talking about the things that matter to us most on our day-to-day basis. That, going back to our discovery page, that's where we really feel like we pull things together, because again, we're asking them to interpret life their way, and then we're trying to fulfill their needs based on their issues, their personal issues. I can't tell you how much that feels good. I think you've experienced it in your business. Right.
Well, let's plan on getting together sometime in the next couple of weeks.
Let's do it.
Before the end of the year, get together and let's see where we can take it.
That sounds great.
What would you like to leave? What would you like to tell people?
You know, I would like to leave with kind of going off of what you were just talking about. We're all human. We all need to have a human wealth aspect in our life. The wealth of being human is to experience life in the way that's most meaningful to us and to give to other people so that they can experience life in a meaningful way for them as well. And that is what our purpose is. And that's what we hope to share with the world, is that feeling of we're all human and let's work for human beings as they should be.
Okay. If somebody wanted to talk to you more, how would they get in touch with you?
You can visit our website at wmbc.financial. And there you can look at our process and what we do. We've got our phone number. We've got our, where our offices are, et cetera. That, I think, would be the best place to go.
Yeah. What was that again?
wmbc.financial.
Great. Well, it's been good talking with you, David and Scott. Good to meet you, and look forward to the next conversation.
Absolutely. Let's do it again.
Thank you all very much.
So here we are. So here we are, just another example of how, in the midst of lots of weirdness around us, we still thrive in California.
You've been listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. To hear more of the programs in this podcast, go to www.willcrist.com.